look at this face today. I've got my hombre in the room today. I'm usually
talking about Rick or me.
No, I'm talking about you, bro. I'm far apart from you usually, but I'm next to you right now. You know, I feel great. How you doing?
Doing great, man. We got a very special guest today. Today's guest is an author, producer, TV host, and news correspondent with more than 30 years of experience with CNN, Fox News, and NBC News. So he just turned off everybody in one fell swoop there. We're good. He is also the co-founder of Cano Health, a healthcare provider for low-income families. In under 5 years, he took the company public with a current valuation of $4.5 billion. So without further ado, Rick Sanchez, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. I really enjoy, I'm going to enjoy this conversation. I like you guys already. I like the way we started off. Hello to you, Gino. Hello to you, Jim.
Hello to you, sir. So let's get to know each other a little bit better. Please share with us your background and how you got started in business.
Well, I'm an immigrant to America. I came to the United States when I was very young from Cuba. My parents barely had a two nickels to rub together, never made more than $11,000 combined income. That's with my dad working two to three jobs and my mom sewing shoes at a factory. So, you know, in that sense, I've had the privilege of learning from real believers and real doers. And that was my mom, Adela, and my dad, Paco. And then I got a football scholarship, went to the University of Minnesota, played football, came back, graduated, ended up doing journalism, became a television news correspondent and anchor, was drafted by NBC, taken to the big time, where I peed in my pants because I was so nervous because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But eventually I figured it out. I became the one of the highest rated anchors on CNN. I had the show called Rick's List. And you know what's really cool? I was one of the first actually, I think I was the very first Latino to have his own namesake show in prime time on a major national television network. So that was neat. Since then, I dabbled in business. And as you said, I got together with some partners and we co-founded a healthcare company that deals in managed care to help transform the healthcare system in the United States. It IPO'd at $4.4 billion, and you know, it's in there in the equities fight with everybody else these days. And since then, I've always believed in the power of what Latinos can do for the U.S. economy and what they are already doing for the U.S. economy. So I've created a lot of businesses around that, and I have my own podcast, and I speak to that. So that's pretty much it. I got four kids and a beautiful granddaughter.
Good.
There you
Excellent.
Go.
Excellent. Rick, what was your favorite interview while at NBC, CNN, Fox? Which one really stands out to you?
Well, Reagan was good. Carter was fascinating. Gorbachev was good. Fidel Castro was a fascinating interview. Obama was cool. But I think Bill Clinton was my favorite. And the reason I say that is because he can't help himself. He kind of
did he touch you?
I give him credit. What's that?
He didn't touch you, did he?
No.
Okay, because
no,
I've seen the Family Guy episodes too, and I know he's just that kind of guy. It doesn't matter. He just, you know.
All right. Since you went there, I'm gonna tell you a story. So I was living in New Jersey at the time. I was working for Univision and NBC, and all of a sudden I get a phone call, and they say it's the president. I run to my studio that I had in the house to do an interview like the one I have here in Florida. And because I needed to get there, I had just come home and I was changing clothes. So I run to the microphone to do the interview with President Clinton, and I realize I'm in my underwear. So I was doing the interview in my underwear, okay? And then I thought to myself, well, this guy did all his good work in his
That's
underwear
right.
too, so what the hell, I think we're even.
That's great.
But the interesting thing about that interview, and the reason it always stands out for me, is he fought me like a dog. I mean, the guy was relentless. I was trying to interview him about that young man who came from Cuba. Some people remember it, the Elian Gonzalez episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, Mr. President, you're wrong. And the reason, and let me tell you why. And then he took umbrage, and he fought me, and he started fighting back. And we were supposed to do like a 10-minute interview. 40 minutes later, the Secret Service is literally trying to pull him away from the mic because he wants to fight and argue and tell me, no, you're wrong. And I thought, what an interesting guy that he really gets off on these. You know, most people, when you interview them, they're more sedate, you know, especially politicians and stuff. That was a funny day. interviewing Bill Clinton. He's quite a character. That
in guy. The Speedos. I can have a little little.
No, I wasn't wearing Speedos, Gino.
Let me
stop that.
Let me ask you the similarities. Give us some similarities amongst, I guess, some people would call these great men, accomplished men. What do you see that sets them apart from others? That if they've achieved greatness, I don't know. I wouldn't call politicians great, but they've aspired to a certain level that most people will never achieve. What do you see in them that they do differently than other people?
Well, I think the obvious thing, and I hate to say this, but I think it's very, very true, is ego. I think ego manifests itself in all of these gentlemen to be able to get to that position where they somehow believe that they are almost deserving of that and kind of act accordingly. And in some ways, look, I mean, it's not to bust their chops. Not that I'm a big fan of anybody who is a politician. And these days, I'm not even a big fan of the presidency as I used to be when I was a young man, given what we've seen in recent years. But that said, I do think that the environment creates the man, especially in American politics these days. Mm-hmm. That whole Abraham Lincoln log cabin thing where a good man just makes it to the top doesn't exist anymore. I think the system is now breeding the people who are leading us. I don't like that, by the way. I wish it went back to finding a man of morals and character, et cetera, and we could kind of build around them. Today, I think the system builds the guy, puts the guy. I mean, with no disrespect to President Biden, but America didn't vote for President Biden in many ways. In many ways, the Democratic Party put him there. And I'm not talking about the election, the Trump thing. I'm talking about that the party infrastructure and the powers in that party and the very, very high-ended interlocked corporate interest in this country decided that we needed to have Biden there. So they kind of chose Biden and put him there.
Propped him up.
And I'm not sure that's healthy. So long answer to a short question.
Yeah, but the other thing about all those other guys that you mentioned, Rick, which I think is interesting, is they all dealt with a ton of adversity and they persisted through. So I think that ego is what's needed to carry these guys when the spotlight is on them all the time, because they're going to get attacked on something and they're going to persist. I mean, you look at Trump. I mean, that guy is just taking so many points. He's still hanging in there. I don't know how it's possible, but he's still there.
I'd have backed it in by now.
Yeah, no kidding.
I was playing golf with him Saturday. Well, let me rephrase that. I wasn't playing with him. He was playing behind me. Every Saturday morning, I go out and play Doral, one of the best courses here in South Florida. I was playing there since I was a little kid, you know, or getting out there, sneaking out there because I used my celebrity to, you know, get a deal because I couldn't afford it. And I was playing the Blue Monster Saturday morning and kind of with some business partners of mine. And all of a sudden, the Secret Service comes around, and there he is. Biggest life Saturday morning. There's President Trump, you know, teeing off. I think we were on the 11th, and he was like two holes behind us on the 9th. And then he went into the club. He was wearing his hat. And it's funny. The only reason I say this is because of the question that you just asked me about. That yes. If I were accused.
I can fight, but not that much.
If you guys were accused of sleeping with a porn star and cheating on my wife. And then, by the way, I'm not saying he's guilty. I'm not taking sides on this thing. But just the overall picture of this, the veneer, right, alone. I would kind of stay home for a while. I wouldn't want to go to restaurants. I wouldn't go outside. I would just be like, I gotta deal with this and stuff. But these guys, this guy, Clinton, all of them, politicians, the next day they're holding news conferences with their wife. Hey, darling, how are you? You know, and you're going, what? In Spanish, we have a name for that. As Latinos, it's called face. Hard face. Vergüenza is the word we use.
No shame.
Tiene que tener vergüenza. You have to have shame. And I guess I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. And I'm not saying I'm perfect because I'm highly imperfect, probably more than anybody. But I couldn't do that. And when I was watching him, I told my buddies, we were playing golf together, and I said, you know, I'm not judging the guy. I don't know if he's guilty, not guilty, or whatever. But I mean, yesterday he was in court, and today he's out here shaking hands and. I don't know. It's just it's a different thing. Maybe it's ego. Maybe
different
it's something
breed.
Else. I don't know.
Yeah.
So in Italian, it's called vergogna. Very similar language.
Yeah.
Vergogna is yeah. It's and So things have changed drastically in the last 15, 20 years where you would have a little bit of shame. How has that happened in the media? Because when you were back on in 2008, 9, 10, it was a little different. I mean, both sides would go after both presidents. As it appears now is just one side, and it seems as if the media is truly biased, in my opinion. I'm conservative. I have 6 children, same like you, large family, I'm religious. So for me, from what I'm looking at it, it seems as if it's been – things have changed a lot in the media. What is your perspective? You used to work in it. Now you see it now. How have things changed from your perspective?
It's a disaster. 15, 20 years. It gets worse every day. And I think to a certain extent, we could almost say that it does us no good at this point to try and get our information from the institutional and corporatized media. Mm-hmm. Because whether you're watching Fox, who's going to do everything possible to make you feel like you're under attack from the left, or MSNBC, who's going to make you think like you're under attack from the right, watching Fox, where the general audience is going to be white guys, watching MSNBC, where the general audience is going to be black women. And of course, that's a, you know, yes, a generalization on my part. There's a lot of people, but you can see that they're choosing certain demographics, and that all they're trying to do is only bring you the stories that they think you're going to agree with and present them in such a way so that you will feel angry, or that you'll have some kind of pathotic effect, right? They'll hit your pathos. They'll make you smile, happy, angry, so that you keep coming back. You need to get your fix. That has nothing the hell to do with news. It may work on talk radio, but news is not talk radio, but news has become talk radio. That's where we are right now. Not to mention the corporatization, where a lot of big companies sit on the board of CNN and Fox and MSNBC and CNN, CBS and ABC and all these and the New York Times. So you've got to wonder whether you're really getting information, or you're getting what Verizon or some other big tech company that sits on their board, or Raytheon, who makes their money by selling bombs, and they want to make sure that story reflects the fact that we need to go to start World War III with Russia tomorrow, or China, or whoever. So there's a lot of that going on, and it's very bothersome. And as a guy who's always kind of played it down the line, and I don't think I'm probably conservative because I'm a conservative living guy. That's my lifestyle and stuff. But I also, and in business, I'm conservative. But when it comes to like some social issues, I tend to, I don't know. I'm like most Americans, I think. I'm not going to choose a side because it cheapens you. So, but we're forced to every day by those channels, and they're not doing it for good reasons. And some of the people there are making over $20 million because they know that they have to toe the line of what that station or network tells them to say or do. And that's not good. And it's not good for our democracy.
I think the interesting thing is that you can deal with many people on a broad scale in business. And you're from all different backgrounds, quote unquote, beliefs. And you usually can find middle ground. But when it comes to politics, you can't. And that's the sad thing, because they've split us apart so bad. The thing that I saw that was interesting, there's a Kennedy that said he was running for president the other day. And he actually talked about the corporatization of the government and how these big businesses are coming in and kind of taking over the government. And, you know, to Gino's point, Gino's, hey, I'm conservative, whatever. But I think if we can take a step back and look what these guys are saying, that he would be running as a Democrat. But that point alone made me stop and say, hey, if I can be truly open-minded, that's something I could get behind and vote for. Because when I see Pfizer and how they've taken over the federal government and how the door's wide open and it's basically become one institution, that makes me very nervous. So if I have a Democrat over here saying that, I can get behind that and support that. So I think that's the thing we need to do as citizens now is look at what these people are standing for and try to get behind real ideas that will make a difference, regardless of, you know, what affiliation they're with. So,
you know, look, I'm a capitalist. You guys are capitalists. Yeah. And, you know, that's the beauty of this country. But there's a difference between being a capitalist and being an overweening, priggish sort of crony capitalist, which says, because I have money, I get to pay for certain things that the rest of America can't get. Because I have money, I will pay fewer taxes. Because I have money, my company is going to have an advantage over my competitor's company. Because I have money and, you know, all of these things that we see happening more and more and more with politicians who literally will take money from these special interests, whether they're on the right or on the left.
You just split them.
And sometimes what I've been reading about lately that's been going on is a lot of these politicians are actually knowing about companies because they vote on certain issues. Well, take Raytheon, for example. I just saw a study that said that the members of Congress and the Senate have increased their shares of Raytheon while they were finding out what was going on in Ukraine and the $103 billion that we sent there, which have gone into the pockets, of course, of Raytheon and Pratt & Whitney and these guys. So they were essentially investing in these stocks. And they've all done really well because they knew that these companies were going to get the money that
they
were
sending them. It's like a huge
money
laundering scheme, right? No, but it's – and the amount that – I'd rather just have them, you know, steal more money up front and let me know.
That right.
Because here's the thing. They're spending billions of dollars to send to Ukraine so they can get a small fraction of that. Just steal a billion and let's not send the money to Ukraine and maybe we'll be in a better spot, right?
I agree with you. I think there may be something to say for public financing of campaigns where we all get together and say, look, what are you running for, Governor? Here's your allotment. You get 500,000. Okay. What are you running for? Senator? Okay. You get 750. You're running for president. You get 3 million. That's it. Yeah. Spend it wisely.
Yeah.
But instead we just let them amass hundreds of millions and millions of dollars. And where do you think that's coming from? And do you think for 1 minute, the people who are giving it to them are not asking for it back?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Sorry. I'm getting, that's the Cuban in me. I'm getting almost a little.
So I'm glad you brought the Cuban in you because it's important. I love your name, by the way. It's Ricardo León. For any of those of you don't know, that's a powerful, strong name. I love the name. And I want you to talk about how Latinos, you know, they've been portrayed in the media, because let's talk about the impact that they can have in business going forward, the demographics. And I'd mentioned to you off camera before that my generation, if it wasn't for immigrants from South America and from Central America, we'd probably be done. Nobody really knows that or understands that. And how can we solve the immigration crisis that we have right now? I think it's a very simple solution. But talk to the listeners about the power of the Latinos and
look,
how they've been portrayed in the media.
The average Latino in the United States, right, works 43 hours a week. The average non-Latino in the United States works 31 to 32 hours a week. The common age of a Latino in America today is 11. So it is by far the youngest demographic. The average Latino has two jobs. The average non-Latino has just over or 0.7? Just less. They're right around one.
0.7.
The numbers are absolutely spectacular. 20% of the population and growing. 83% of car growth, Latinos. 60% of home buying and mortgages, Latinos. You go down the list. The people driving the economy of the United States are Latinos. Now, does that mean they're wunderkinds and amazing species or nothing? No, they're just like everybody else. They come to this country. They're hungry. Just like our ancestors, and they want to do good things. Does that mean we need to open the borders and let them all in? Hell no. But it does mean that we need to have a smart approach to how we deal with this. And it's not with Nancy Pelosi, which is a stupid comment she made lately, where she said something about she was going after DeSantis because DeSantis had done that stupid thing where he tried to get a bunch of them and move them somewhere. And he said, why would he? She said, why would we ship them to the Northeast when there's a lot of farmers who could use them picking their crops?
I heard that.
Really?
I didn't hear that.
I haven't figured out yet that Latinos are doctors and lawyers and nurses, and they're driving.
Tell us how you really feel, Nancy.
Ways than just mowing your freaking lawn, Nancy. Yeah. So between the Democrats who don't understand the effect that Latinos are really having in the United States, and all they do is create dependency and lip flap. And the Republicans who are so caught up on the border thing and trying to make that, like, yes, we have a problem in the border. We can deal with the border without demonizing the people who are crossing the border.
Yes.
Because everybody has, that would be like saying Europe is a horrible place and the Atlantic Ocean, we need to do away with the, put guards on the Atlantic Ocean because everybody who came to America at one point crossed the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, it just, they emphasize the wrong things when we could figure out how to come up with a common sense solution. Just like we do with credit cards and the other technology that we have now, where we can say, what do we need as far as workers in America? And boy, do we need them.
Yes.
Boy, do we need them, because Americans are old, they're not breeding, and they're generally not wanting or working at a lot of these jobs. I mean, that's just a
That's so the reality.
Because we need them, let's figure out a way to fill these jobs and create a smart way of dealing with this. But no, we'd rather just, you know, fight and insult each other, and it's crazy.
My follow-up question to that is, if I'm a business owner, how do I capitalize? How do I, you know, tap into the Latino community, whether it's getting them as jobs, offering them jobs, or creating products and services that is for the Latino community? What would your advice be on that?
Oh, I think, first of all, from a marketing standpoint, you have to understand how they live, where they live, what matters to them. The average Latino is most interested, for example, in family. That's mm-hmm. one of the most important things to them. Understanding that they are regionally different. The way that you market to a Cuban in Miami is different than a Mexican American in Chicago or a Honduran American in Los Angeles. So, I think it depends on what your market is, of course, whether you're selling, baseball bats or houses, for example. No one will fill up your apartments, pay on time, and make their payments more than Latinos. I mean, statistically, they are often described to me once when I've done stories about this throughout the country. I was working at CNN, and they sent me, just a quick story. They sent me to Dalton, Georgia. Why Dalton, Georgia? Dalton, Georgia is the carpet mill of the United States. It was back in the 90s.
Just south of Chattanooga. I know where you're talking. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We created this thing where we started, we made carpets for the entire world. But then after the soldiers came out, they took their jobs, but their kids, when they retired recently in the last 20 or 30 years, didn't want the jobs. So the carpet mill was going to dry up. So they essentially imported, a lot of Latinos, a lot of Mexicans and stuff, and they came there and worked. So I told CNN, I want to go up there because I'm hearing there's a lot of, it was a time when Joe Arpaio was criticizing Mexicans, and I went up there. And I interviewed the church leaders and the government leaders and the Chamber of Commerce and the dry cleaning guy. And I said, tell me what it's like to live in a town that suddenly has manifested itself with a lot of Latinos, a lot of these, Mexican Americans and stuff. They said, these are the hardest working people. They show up on time. They pay their bills. They're last to leave. They fill up our churches. They fill up our parks. They're family oriented. I was like, oh my God.
Sounds like the 1950s.
What we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And understanding that and not fearing it, I think could make any employer more apt to understand what his potential audience or consumer base could be. And I'm not sure we do that enough. And part of it's not their fault. It's because the media makes them think that they're all, coming here to rape their sister and all they can do is mow a lawn, when there's a lot of great talent out there, not to mention consumers who are good to have for your company.
Love that. Yeah. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
All right, we're back. I think those are all some great points, because ultimately you're talking about a traditional society and getting rid of a lot of the craziness that surrounds us today. Everything that you just said there makes me feel wholesome and comfortable, right? That's the type of society I actually aspire to live in and be a part of. So I think if we can bring out the positives there and just, be transparent with people with what's going on inside these communities, I think people will be a lot more accepting of that.
Yeah, and most Latinos, by the way, are going to be very, they're going to have, you use the word common sense. I think the Latino community, even politically, has a common sense approach to things. I mean, you don't see Latinos way left. You don't see Latinos way right, because they go to church, because they're family oriented. They tend to match up with most of the traditional American values.
Yes.
While at the same time, they're not right-wing ideologues. They're not left-wing ideologues. I'm very comfortable in saying that. That's not to say we've got the whole thing figured out, but I like where Latinos are in terms of their view of America. Mm-hmm. And every single piece of research that I've seen says that Latinos are more optimistic. Key word here. more optimistic about America than any other cohort in the United States. They buy in 100% on patriotism. They're more apt to fight in wars. They're more apt to, in fact, the Marine commandant was recently quoted as saying, I can't take any more Latinos or the whole damn force is going to be all Latino right now because they've just filled up the Marines. So in that sense, when you look at that, you think, well, how can I build my company around people who believe in this? How do I reach those people? And obviously, that's where I think the key is to find the good public relations firms, the good marketing firms that know how to do Latino outreach and not just, go with, what you think works. But there is a specific way to be able to reach Latinos.
Rick, I wanted to ask you this question early on. I probably should have. But how did you transition from being in media to capitalism? I mean, that's a complete shift. I mean, like, now you're paying your own way now. You've got to make your own dollars, whereas media, you were getting a paycheck every week. How did that transition work?
Gino, that's a great point. And I've learned it. And, you know, like everything else in life, you learn most by trial and error, by failing, by figuring things out. Cano Health was, in many ways, a great experience where we just had the right number of people at the right time building a managed care product, which is necessary because we have to improve healthcare in the United States. We have to make it so that when someone gets sick, it doesn't cost me $40,000 a day because when they had a fever, nobody went to see them. And now they have a severe infection and they're in a hospital for 3 weeks. So we need to have a way to create primary care physicians for everyone in the United States. Awesome. Great. That's kind of what we did and it works. And, I think it can be done in such a way so that you have a private element involved in it with insurance companies while you have the government, taking care of what we need to do as well with Medicare and Medicaid. So that was one of those things where I guess I stepped in and they said to me, we're going to build a company and we need somebody who understands messaging. We need somebody who can get up and speak. We need somebody who can write commercials. We need somebody who can write press releases. And my partner said, I know you've always been a journalist, but I bet you that stuff transfers. It does. And anybody listening to the sound of my voice right now who's thinking about moving or changing careers or might have been recently fired and they don't know what to do with themselves, I guarantee you, there are skills that you have that you have learned from whatever it is you do now that you can take and transfer into the business community, into an entrepreneurial place. All I ever knew was how to write news copy. Well, I taught myself and used those same skills, messaging, impactful messaging, how to make people stand up and listen. Within 1 year of starting this company, I started a series of spots. I triangulated my brand with a television station. And we were doing 400 to 500 enrollments a month. Now think about that. That's $2,000 PMPM. If you exculpate it all the way down, you could figure out just how big that is. And it was pretty simple. I would go on TV. I would do a radio. I would do a television show. The TV station got Rick Sanchez, which they wanted because they figured, well, this guy was on TV. People are going to watch him. They did. Their ratings go up. They won. I got something out of it because I had this job and I had a salary. And the company I owned, I did a deal with the station. I said, we get 30% of the avails on my show. So if we're doing 3 minutes of commercials, I get a minute and a half. And we get to do what? Sell Cano Health. Well, nice. With that minute and a half, we had 800 phone calls a day. And that's how I built
some lead generation the Cano there, folks. Brand.
To be very specific, what you just asked me, how did you go from being a TV guy doing the news on CNN to building a multi-billion dollar company? That's how I did it.
So with that point, then starting these small businesses that turned into larger businesses, give folks some insight on how to scale. Because if you're going from, maybe you just got laid off from a tech job or maybe you're, starting at your own venture, what were some of the keys to scaling those organizations? Because I think that's the point where people get pinched and they're not able to take it to the next level.
Well, there's two ways to scale, right? I mean, if you're looking at it from a big picture standpoint in terms of a company that you really want to grow and grow fast, right? There's organic scaling and there's acquisitional scaling. And I'm a big believer that it needs to be at least 75-25. I think
Which
too
direction?
Many people go in today to these kinds of situations and they want to spend, buy. I don't think, now, I'm going to temper what I said. during the COVID and during this crazy time 3 years ago, you kind of could, because the banks were encouraging irresponsible behavior. Go out and just buy, blow it up, go in debt, don't worry about it. But all of those people who did that are paying for it now. So I think in the end, you have to build whatever you're doing, whether you're, you know, doing, you know, getting people to fill your apartments or buying gas stations, you have to have some sense of organic scaling so that you have your eye on the prize in terms of marketing, so that you know what your baseline is for your reach of consumers and what it can be. And if you don't see that trickling up, in other words, if your organic growth is this, and your acquisitional growth is this, at some point, you're in trouble. So I'm a big believer in the first thing you do when you do a company is ask yourself, how many consumers do I have today? And how do I get those consumers to be double in the next year and then double after that? And I mean a real plan in terms of how I'm going to market to get them, how I'm going to make sure I'm in the right places, how I'm going to message correctly. And then, yes, I also am going to try and buy the other store. And then I'm going to buy a store in Kendall and one in Miami Beach and maybe one in Palm Beach. But I'm not going to go in thinking if I just buy those stores, I'm going to be fine, because scale doesn't work that way. And we've been fooled to think it does. So that would be my message of the day based on
think about what you're saying, though. If you have one store and you're not running it successfully, but you want to go buy another store, you're going to be putting bad on bad because you haven't figured your shit out yet. So I think that's a fantastic point.
And too many people do. They just keep thinking, well, the problem is we're not big enough. No, the problem is you're not good enough.
Exactly.
So get
right.
good before you
yes.
get big.
I love and, that. That's a fantastic
and,
point.
You know, we were fortunate that we were able to, with one clinic, you know, we now have clinics all over the United States and 310,000 members. When we started, we had like 50 members in one clinic in one place. But we built that up by doing the right marketing, you know? And at the, mm-hmm. so it's the answer is it's a gradual step up of organic with acquisitional. Organic with that, but you can't let one override the other. And if you are, make it organic and not acquisitional, because it can never take away your consumers. But but overspending and you know, going into default because you can't take care of your levers, that's a bigger problem.
There's two things that we say at Jake and Gino. One is you can't outgrow your infrastructure, which is exactly what you're talking about. And the second thing, I love to hear this. I've heard this from one of my mentors. Revenue is vanity, profit margin is sanity, and cash is king. Everyone's always looking at the revenue aspect. I mean, my pops always used to tell me, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And I think that's really, really important. The cash that's at right. the end of the day, if you can't manage your cash, it doesn't matter how much you're bringing in. You have to understand a balance sheet, an income statement, a statement of cash flows. And a lot of business owners don't know that. And if you don't know that, go back to school and learn that. That's so important.
Yeah. It's interesting. We speak to so many other apartment owners that don't actually know their profit per unit. One of the most basic, you know, KPIs that we use. And so it's a very good point, you know. Anything, we're about to wrap this up. Anything that you've read over the last year or two that you want to recommend to the folks? Anything that's added value to your life from a business perspective?
No, I mean, I think life is experiential, right? I mean, I think we learn mostly from, you know, what we do and what we experience. And I think one of the best things that has happened to me in my life is I have failed a lot. I was humiliatingly fired by CNN in a very public way. And I had to pick myself up from my bootstraps and rebuild myself, rebuild my name, and rebuild my, you know, my value. And I think if I was to leave...
I think that worked out for you okay.
Yeah, no, it did. And by the way, if you haven't fallen lately or failed, find somebody and tell them to trip your ass, because it's in the falling down that you get up and you're better. It just, good God, every time in my life when I've fallen, I've always ended up on top and in a better situation. And I don't know why. And I wish I had the exact formula for it, other than, you know, perseverance and all the other fun words that we like to throw out there. But there's something about falling on your ass that just, I think, in the end, makes you a better person. And in the end, the only thing that makes you good is value. That's it. One word, value. You have to find value in yourself so that you can succeed, whether you're a tycoon apartment home owner or a guy who just bought a McDonald's franchise or whatever, right? What's the value? I mean, I was, in fact, reading a book recently, and the author, forgot his name, I should give him credit, I apologize, said, young man working at McDonald's, and his job is to throw out the trash. And that's all he does every day. He throws out the trash. So you'd think he'd be very replaceable, but he does something funny. Every time he goes to throw out the trash, he sings, and he's got a really nice voice. And as he's taking the trash out to the dumpster, all the employees say, oh, God, there comes Bill. I love the way he sings. And he's always got that smile on his face. And he's always happy. And he sings and he makes everybody else happy. So by singing, he created value out of a crappy job. And that Bill went on to become the manager of that store, own that store, and now he owns five other McDonald's. And what did he do? He created value in himself. He sang on the way to throw out the trash. That's the story of how you become successful. You create value in yourself. That's all it is.
I love it. Gino, take us home, big guy. I want to wrap up Rick's story because to me, it's the personification of the American dream. I mean, having parents like Adele and Paco who are making $11,000 a year, that's gross. And being able to go to school, going to college, getting the scholarship, then going out to NBC, almost peeing his pants, and then actually interviewing the president in his underwear. That's a pretty great picture right there. And then continuing along his journey, falling and tripping and getting fired, like he said, humiliatingly, but he didn't stop. And then all of a sudden, he's on the golf course with President Trump behind him. So you see his life come full circle, having those parents. And to me, one thing that we didn't really mention in the show, which we should have, and we glossed over it, there's a tremendous amount of hard work that's gone through it. And he's learned the values of hard work through his parents. And I'm sure that he's taught his children that. And hopefully his children are imbued with those values and they'll carry that on to the next generation. And the power of the Latino community, let's not overlook that, because I think that's truly important as well. If you're a business owner listening to this, go out there and try to serve that community because they are on the march. They're from all the statistics that we've heard, they're doing really, really well and they're only growing. And I think they give a lot of hope to this country as far as, like you said, filling the churches, buying the cars, filling the schools, doing the hard work, 41 plus hours a week, not worrying about having a second hustle. That's really, really important. That's what I think the American dream is about. And, you know, to Jake and myself, it's been an honor and a privilege to be able to interview and to get to know you a little bit today.
That's nice, guys. You seem like real genuine good guys, and I have enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for honoring me by even caring about my little story.
Thank you.
You got it, Rick. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's a G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.